Hi, and welcome back to Apology, a podcast about books and reading. I'm Jesse Pearson, your host, and the founder of the occasionally published Apology magazine. Today's guest is the musician, songwriter, and Philadelphian Kurt Vile. He's one of the most distinctive artists working today in the sense that there is a Kurt Vile vibe that nobody else shares. It's a sort of lexicon of moods and moves that is entirely his own and entirely of a cohesive piece. I think it's rare that a musician possesses something as inimitable as Vile does, and I always feel good inside the Kurt Vile cloud. He's also a dedicated and curious reader. In the conversation that follows, we talk about everything from favorite music biographies to Apology stalwart Dennis Johnson to Kurt's lyrics writing process, his favorite poets, and his book strategies when on tour. Before we get started, I'd just like to tell you that this episode is sponsored by our friends at Sci-Fi Fantasy, who are on the cutting edge of cultural engineering, societal hypothesizing, and user-friendly futurism. Learn more at scififantasy.co. Sci-Fi Fantasy, generic technology, free will, and spirituality. And now, without further knuckle-cracking, please welcome the deeply wonderful Kurt Vile to the Apology Podcast. So what are you reading right now?
Right now, by chance, what I'm reading is that it was sent to me, I guess because I get mentioned at the very beginning, but it's the latest Lou Reed bio by Will Hermes. Is that how you say his name? Or whatever. It's called the Lou Reed, the King of New York. And that's what I'm reading this second. And when I started, because when the last Lou Reed bio came out, my wife got it for me for Christmas. I've been a Lou Reed fan since I was a teen, like hardcore. But when she got it for me, this one, Lou Reed, A Life by Anthony DeCurtis, and he actually knew Lou Reed. And it was really good because once in a while, I take Lou Reed for granted only to get reminded, like all our heroes, you know, you take them for granted because you grew up on them and then you get so deep again. And that's what I loved about when a few years ago when this book by Anthony DeCurtis was new, because it was like firsthand, he knew him. And then when this book showed up on my step, these days I don't even know, like a book is like my friend and it takes a while for me to fully commit. So I'll be reading a few at once. And this new Lou Reed book, at first in the beginning when they're talking about childhood and things like that, and maybe it's like when you get to know somebody, you know the rhythm of the way they talk, the way they write. I wasn't 100% sure if I was in, because he's very meticulous, but I wasn't sure because he wasn't talking about stuff I knew. But once the Velvet Underground get involved and all the different characters, like everybody involved in the Exploding Plastic Inevitable and Andy Warhol and every character, like then it's just complete. It's all so juicy and well written at the same time, very studious and sort of modern. And you know, he ties in all the gender, everything that's going on. Yeah, obviously it's been going on forever, but now it's like to the forefront. So it, you know, and he was obviously a pioneer, you know, from the beginning with all that. And you've been on the road lately. We go back to the album The Bells, which is the weirdest, most fried album of all time. And my favorite record has always been Street Hassle, but I'm obsessed with that again. And it sort of reminds me of like when I was a kid and I got that for a couple dollars at a bookstore, the book trader or something. Like you look into his sunglasses, it's the coolest photo ever. And you see that like the reflection in his sunglasses. And it's like you look into those sunglasses and you go into that portal almost, and you're never the same. You're a teenager listening to Lou Reed, and obviously Lou Reed is so, his songs are literature, you know. Who else has a three-part street poem called Street Hassle, you know? It's just an ultimate story. So I don't know, that's what I'm reading this second. And yeah, I'm only at the first album, and but it's so good. I'm hooked. So
yeah,
this is my friend lately. But I like to read a lot of things at once, too.
Well, I was going to say, with biographies, I often skip the childhood.
Right. And I think I'm so or, you know, partly OCD enough that it's, let's put it this way, like a milestone in my brain, you know, it could have been 10 years or more ago now, is that I realize, but in the old days I would try to skip ahead, but my brain would be tired and I wouldn't even want to finish it. And then I'm like, oh, you got to read the introduction or read. I read it from front. I read from the beginning to the end. That gets me set up. So it's almost like I said, you're getting to know a friend. You ease in that way. And then somewhere along the way, you're like, oh man, this person's my friend. I like what he has to say. I like what they have to say. And then like, that's why I'm an obsessive person, but like, anybody I get into, they become my friend. You know their language, and then next thing you know, you're like chuckling to yourself because you get their humor throughout all their books, you know, be it like I forget, I don't know how you, like, mute for as far as music bios, like Nick Tosh's. I always say Tosh's. That might not be.
No, yeah, I think that's right. I think that's what I say. Yeah.
Same deal. Like, I read Hellfire. I was hooked right away. I tried to read Country, The Twisted Roots of Rock and Roll after that, but it was so deep with the country and I didn't quite get his language. And then instead I read, you know, George Jones, I lived to Tell It All, which is his autobiography.
Yeah, that's a great book.
And then that's like the gateway drug into realizing, you know, until you get back into Lou, you're like, all these rock books, you know, I grew up reading, or these music books, they're all a bunch of posers compared to these country guys. They're just like, they'll play circles around you and they'll 10 times, 100 times more crazy. But anyway, same deal with Nick Tosh's. I read Hellfire. And then finally, once I worked myself up, I read a bunch of Nashville-related books. And then I worked myself back to Country, The Twisted Roots of Rock and Roll, only to realize it's the best too, you know. It's primitive, it's raw, and then you read all his books, like Unsung Heroes of Rock and Roll, that was a huge one. I love his, especially his Roots books, but I read the others, like Dino, but I tend to like just read everything by an author, or like same with as far as fiction or whatever, like Dennis Johnson, you know.
Oh yeah, that's my man.
That's my man, right? And same deal, my friend Mary, she lent me his Jesus Son back in like 2014, and it would always sit on my shelf. But let's thank this pandemic in ways, you know, because I finally had always looking for excuse to not leave the house and just sit and catch up with myself and read books nonstop. And I finally kept hearing his name enough lately from people like who I love, like Terry Allen, you know, or he's like, I Love Anything by Dennis Johnson, or, for, you know, friends of mine were in his plays or things like that. But anyway, I read Jesus Son, which is also like the Bible, you know, no pun intended, and not to tie it all in with, you know, Lou Reed, but that's just because it's cosmic, you know, like, and then you just read a bunch of those in a row once you get the rhythm and you just laugh with your friend, you know, Jesus Son
I have them all here. So you've read all of Johnson at this point?
Not all, but I had a good run. I read Jesus Son a couple times in a row because it was so good. I like those kind of books. And then into The Largesse of the Sea Maiden, into Train Dreams, and then worked myself up to Tree of Smoke, you know, which is epic. And I was reading that while I was finishing my last record. Not this one, but the one before that. I mean, there are songs that I was recording during that time because they're from that era, but I just love when you find your man. So like, I feel like now lately between like Dennis Johnson is my fiction. He's like literally the guy, you read him, you come back to him later. I read a bunch of stuff, and then I read even Name of the World. Oh, but what, I forgot one. One thing is then around that time I was into him, I got his first novel, Angels, right?
Amazing book. Yeah.
And I would be reading that. It'd be really funny, but I'd be reading it in between reading music books. You know, I like to, these days I like to have one of each, you know, like, and that one was making me laugh. I was like, this might be his best book. And then I was not prepared for what happened at the end. And it coincided with, you know, my bandmate being, it's not like I haven't experienced this in my life, but at the time our bandmate was sick, you know, which she had been for a while, but it wasn't looking good. And that let's just say that book devastated me, but it is the most profound fiction book I've read.
I found
a first edition. You know, I'm not that kind of guy to get a first edition, but it's like a cosmic thing. I saw it there, just sitting there. I was like, well, I think I have to get this. This is some kind of crossroads in my life. Somebody's talking to me, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it was speaking to you. Isn't it? It's just the best feeling when you discover an author and you just want to go down the rabbit hole with them completely.
Yeah.
Have you read Johnson's nonfiction book, Seek, S-E-E-K? It's like his journalism.
I have read some of that. That's what I get. I tend to get, all of them, plan to read them all, but I have that. I read some of that. Oh, yeah. Also, this one here. This one I read really fast. Like, this one's like Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah. Nobody Move.
Yeah, and it looks the best cover ever.
It's great.
And then, yeah, I started reading his poetry as well. Like, let's just say every time I go back to him, like, I also had that Name of the World, and that wasn't even my favorite, but there'll be just this moment in all his books, but where he'll be talking about what's going on, and then he'll take you down. It's almost like shoegaze music or something. You go down into this zone, and you get so poetic about life, or even in just one sentence. And then I read on his website, which was very influential. Like, he's like, well, basically, I just write sentences. You know, you start with he reels you in with a sentence.
Yeah.
One after another. Every time I read him, I swear I'm going to write a book. Not that I'd ever write something linear, you know, or because I write songs or I write poetry. But ever since pandemic times, I got back to that where I used to always fill up journals, and then I was always on the go, and it's like half filled journals and all these never ending notes in a phone that you forget where they are.
Yeah.
You know, that's the world we're in now, which is, it is what it is. It's convenient in some ways, but obviously it's quite problematic in others. So, but when I was sitting still again, I was just filling up journals, and I make sure I sit down every morning. I get up. The one thing I have to do is have coffee and sit down and read something, usually play jazz music, so there's no words, you know, at the same time. But I do that to start my day, and I sit down, write down in the journal. Usually, you know, it usually ends up being a poem that at first sounds cool, and then it's just stream of consciousness. But
yeah,
whatever.
That's great. I mean, I think I learned from David Berman to just write 20 lines a day, no matter what. Get 20 lines out if you're writing poetry, and I made that a practice every morning, and it just accumulates, and all of a sudden you have so much work.
Wow, that's awesome, and I love David. You know, I wish we were more friends. You know, we were definitely good friends. Had I obviously known he would leave us, you know, I would have been calling him every day. But you know, I grew up influenced by him, and so that is an amazing. That's smart, you know, and because I'm not quite so organized, but some days I would be doing that every day, and it does accumulate, and then yeah, I'll think about that practice.
Yeah, it definitely helped me. God, I got a couple things I want to mention. Well, whenever somebody brings up Dennis Johnson, there are two writers I'd like to mention who were influences on him, who, if you haven't read, you should check out. Robert Stone, the book Dog Soldiers.
Okay.
And Leonard Gardner, the book Fat City. Those are both big Dennis Johnson influences. Not to be too didactic or pedantic there, but...
No.
I was gonna ask you though, what's the difference between writing lyrics and writing poetry for you? How do the practices differ?
Well, nowadays, honestly, like I write more poetry combined with like now I just let my brain, I just leave it open, and I feel my best stuff is poetry, you know, and I guess I'll have, because I know I got an epic album coming along, you know, I don't, it's weird because when I go up to a song, lyrics will come to me or they won't, but then I have all these really good lyrics in my journal, like, you know, it seems like, and it is sort of an issue because I love to read, and I love poetry. Even poetry for me, rarely, even though I love to read personally, and I love poetry, but very rarely do I finish a book of poetry. You know, it's weird because I love it. I'm really proud of it. I'm saying it in my head, but reality is poetry. Things are meant to be read aloud, you know. So that is tricky. I think I'm at some kind of reckoning of how I'm going to do my next album, and then I would like to publish something. I mean, it would be a dreamy something one day, but maybe you know. That is always the what I don't know when it's a song and when it's a poem. Except when obviously. Once I'm singing it into the microphone to the song, and sometimes I'll always in the old days I'd fill up a song with lyrics, and but these days it I feel like I float between more now, so that's kind of where I'm at.
Do you approach writing from a sort of purely inspirational stream of consciousness kind of way, or do you start out ever with a theme or a topic that you know you want to write about?
I guess I have some themes with like song titles, which more like if anything, I imagine there's some kind of country song. If I have a theme, it's like a country song, you know. But yeah, when inspiration strikes, sometimes it does get lost pretty quick. Not lost, but it does get stream of consciousness. Like you have really cool lines to start, but then if I'm on a roll, it just really depends. I look back, you know, I remember I went camping recently with the family, and I really needed to go. I didn't realize it. I was like, oh, I got so much to do, blah, blah, blah. But then I got in the woods for a couple days. By the second or third day, I was finishing books. I had all these books that I hadn't finished, you know. I was in that world where all books aren't done. I finished all of them. And then I felt like I really liked what I was writing in my journal going back. But I feel like I need to get more disciplined. I think that's the crossroads I'm at. But sometimes I'm writing a lot, and other times I think my rule has been don't force it. That's definitely a thing with me. Don't force it, and enjoy doing nothing as well. Because there's plenty of times where it's going to be busy again. But once in a while, I hit a wall and I'm like, I gotta be doing something, you know?
Do you have any favorite poets?
Well, I would say my favorite poet now is just Dennis Johnson, you know, but definitely David Berman. My wife, Suzanne, she studied poetry and she went to grad school at Emerson, and she studied with Bill Knott at Emerson. People love him.
Yeah, I love him. I own a painting by Bill Knott.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, she's schooled in the poets for sure, and I think throughout time being around her, I've been moved by poems, but I don't pay that close attention aside from, you know, David Berman. I know through his music, and then I loved his book of poetry, so influential as a teen. I got it as soon as it came out, you know, but that, you know, certain poems move me. I remember even when I was a young teen, by chance I was, my wife, she went to Dartmouth, and I went there and I saw Galway Connell read a poem. It's like, again, it's like he read it out loud, and it was about a blackberry. It's called Blackberry Eating, and he read it aloud. And then, you know, years later, I wrote a song called Blackberry Song. Like, you know what I mean? I remembered it from that time.
Yeah,
that
sure.
It was like, yeah.
No, I love that. I think maybe with poetry, even more than certain kinds of novels, and the lines will hang around and kind of come back on you later on.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Totally. And I, like, being super into writing, you know, wherever I'm at with writing now, which is definitely more of a writer than a songwriter or a poet combined. You know, I don't know exactly what, but I intentionally bought more poetry to get that part of my brain working. And again, it's sort of like, yeah, I read the Dennis Johnson poems, but only a few, and they do come back to me. And same with, but it's usually sort of, there's like a bridge coming from music where like Sun Ra, for instance, he's another person I worship, and his ghost, you know, the Sun Ra house isn't that far from me. So even like his Immeasurable Equation, where it's somewhere, it's poetry, sure, but it's also, you know, prophetic and just sort of insane in the best way. Well, you know,
definitely his art too. Have you seen that book that came out last year of it's called Sun Ra on Saturn, I think, and it's all the Saturn label cover art?
I did. I got that, and it is awesome. That definitely, I accumulated a few Saturns lately through my manager Rennie. And did you ever read the Sun Ra book, Space is the Place?
Or you know what? I haven't, and I really want to. Yeah,
that's one too. Like, I got it years ago, and maybe the pandemic had hit, or maybe it was right before, and I had just read the intro, and just in the intro alone was stimulating, and I kept trying to go back. But then during the pandemic, I read it, and it's pretty meticulous, and it goes off on tangents, but it's so rewarding. For you just fall in love with him and his insanity, basically. And
absolutely, yeah. But there's a new autobiography by one of his drummers now. I forget who it was, but
yeah, that's, I got that as well. A Strange Celestial Road by Ahmed Abdullah.
So you've got the Lou Reed bio going, the new one. What else is in the rotation right now?
Okay, another book that I just finished, another music bio. I feel like you might have read this or at least know about it. My manager Rennie turned me onto this. The dude isn't. It's definitely like for today, it's controversial. Like, I don't, this might get blacklisted today, but it's a crazy good read. It's like an ep, and it's like combines where, you know, I said I like a music book and a fiction book. Well, this combines them both. It's like you're reading neither of these books, you know, these cliches have I read, but like War and Peace or whatever, you know, like Gone with the Wind or whatever, like American cliche epic novel. But this is a Straight Life, the story of Art Pepper.
How did I know you were going to say that? I love that book. Yeah.
You know, because like there's only so many, and maybe there's only one, and this is it. I mean, there's often like a really strong butt kicking woman in the background, you know. Laurie Pepper, she wrote this book, really, and she just let him talk. And then I forget if she previously had, if she was previously a documentarian or archivist, but she's so meticulous the way she did it. Again, and this is like when I said, you know, you read the intro. The intro is great too, but she has an outro to this book, and she tells how she wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so meticulous and cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the way she, I think partly, I mean, he's so insane, but also funny and obviously a genius. It's also crazy too, because like, you know, with like he has the perspective of, you know, obviously it's a racist world, but he has the perspective of he was like a minority playing jazz as a white dude, and he said he didn't always have the best time, you know, being taken seriously. But he, oh man,
I mean, you want to talk about a biography that doesn't shy away from the dark stuff. It's a very warts and all autobiography. Yeah,
it is. And, you know, just from being, you know, substance abuser to, you know, to the extreme, which is often happens with genius types. His life is a roller coaster. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. It does read novelistically. For those that didn't catch it, we're talking about the jazz musician Art Pepper's autobiography, Straight Life, which he wrote with his wife Lori.
I mean, yeah, it would be canceled in some ways, but it's an important read at the same time. It's like for anybody who reads a certain type of book. Or musicians, or people, or writers, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you like crime fiction and pulp and noir novels, it's a good read in that way too.
Yeah, for sure.
What else is on the pile right now?
Well, earlier when we were talking about you know, words creeping up and poetry and such, I got two other pandemic saviors. One I was reading before then, and he bled in, but the other I had read before, but he was just very comforting during the pandemic, was obviously Philip K. Dick. You're a fan of Philip K. Dick?
I am, but I haven't read as much as I feel like I should have.
Yeah, well, that's because he's got so many books, and then he's great, but he can kind of just churn them out. But I read in particular A Scanner Darkly over the pandemic, and that one, again, his wife was behind it, it turns out. And that one, first I read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is Blade Runner, with the best title, which was good. It's more entertaining, you know, just I like to read about androids in general, you know. But then it led up to A Scanner Darkly, which is very druggy sci-fi, but I love that one so much. I don't know, it really struck a chord. And then the one which is autobiographical is Valis,
right?
I think A Scanner Darkly is perfect, and then if you just accept his mind, which some say he was schizophrenic or whatever, like he just goes off in his own world, but those do something to my brain in a good way, in a weird way to say that's in a good way, but and then also just for writing in general, you know, I love William S. Burroughs. You know, obviously people drop his name often, but especially his straightforward, if you read Junkie and Queer and Interzone, that book is like a collection, but it kind of shows him be direct. But you know, you'll hear, my point is he has recurring lines all the time, you know what I mean, because he just sits down and writes. I would say I write a lot like that, where I'll bring back certain lines now, and I'll be kind of proud because I realize, wow, it's like, yeah, you can't just do something once and say you're a writer. You got to come back to it, and you got to keep your mind open to it, and then it comes back later. Maybe you just use it again, and somewhere along the way too. Like so, I love those more straight Burroughs books, the Yage letters or whatever, however you say that. Just because he's funny and blunt, and his sentences are kind of short, you know, when they need to be, or often. But then I read a biography of him, and that's usually how I can get virtual reality with anyone, whether it's like Neil Young, you read Shaky or something, then you're listening to the albums, and you're like, I know exactly what was happening. And so with Burroughs, it made me able to even read, you know, when you're a kid, you're a teen, you pick up Naked Lunch, and you're like, well, this is unreadable. But then like through, I guess, the knowing what was going on and how he came to that progress of cutting things up and everything that was behind Naked Lunch, I made myself read it front to back. And sure, sometimes you just got to force yourself through it because it is all cut up and insane. But like, but the good stuff is like crazy good. Like there's a reason why it's so popular, or like, I believe, you know, it's really poetic.
It is. He's another writer like Dennis Johnson who's just really great on the sentence level.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all, and if you remember that, it's just you got to write a sentence. And I forget that, and I'm glad I'm talking to you and remembering it now, because I'm currently in some kind of brain fog where I have an album, I have so much music in my computer, I have a home studio, I have studios I could go to, you know, I have instruments all over. It's like, am I completing anything? Well, no, maybe I need to start with a sentence, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you, is there, when you're writing music as opposed to writing words, is there an equivalent to the sentence in music? Is it the riff? Is it the chord progression or something foundational like that, you know?
Well, I think there are different ways to look at that, or maybe there's more than one sentence, various kinds of sentences. I don't know. But yeah, I think definitely you got to have a hooky groove at first. For my music, I'm not saying everyone, but I think on another level, yeah, if you just got to reel somebody in with me, it's often pretty, you know, it depends on your taste, but like a hooky groove to start. And I guess a line that I feel like I try to get more simple all the time. So just a line that resonates with somebody on the human level, you know, that's a good place to start, you know? But yeah, it depends, man. I get distracted. And then you just stumble upon it. Also, it's sort of like, you could say also, you just got to make a studio date and get in the studio. Just like you got to sit down with your practice and write 20 words a day. I think eventually it comes down to that, you know, you could sit around and think forever, but you just got to have some kind of deadline or something scheduled, and you got to show up, you know. Well, first of all, I'm one of 10 siblings, and we lived in a twin house with 3 bedrooms, and I guess eventually there was a bedroom in the basement that one person could live in, but so it was pretty close quarters. I mean, we had books, but not, they were supportive, but we didn't have a bunch of shelves of books, but I would do a similar thing when I loved to read when I was a kid, but I would go on tangents. I'd literally, you know, I was a sucker for like S.C. Hinton, you know, I would do the same thing. I would read them all as a kid. It kind of makes you dream as a kid. You're like, oh, wow, these, you know, they're all in gangs, but you could tell it's funny in some ways. It was written by a woman because like the way the brothers are so affectionate toward each other, like, you know, like in a way that I was never with my brothers, let's put it that way, you know.
Okay. Well, something about S.E. Hinton, I mean, with the Outsiders and Rumblefish, at least, it's kind of cool as a kid reading them because there aren't really parents in them.
Right.
I mean, I know they have a dad. Right. They have a dad in Rumblefish, but he's a fall-down drunk who doesn't really, you know, act as a dad. And I think that kind of fantasy, especially in the Outsiders, of like running free is pretty evocative when you're a kid.
Definitely. Definitely. You dream of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you, if there weren't that many books around, how did you like get into, like, when did you know you were a reader and how did you get books when you were a kid?
Yeah. I think through friends, you know, a little before I graduated, maybe, or definitely right after I got into things. I remember I read like J.D. Salinger, you know, like typical Catcher in the Rye or something. And then I'd start reading all, you know, get recommended all those, like the Franny and Zoe, just through friends, really, and definitely Steinbeck too. I feel like even into my 20s, you know, I would say that I'm pretty ADD, so I push myself to read, you know, but I don't know, somewhere along the way, you know, I feel like everybody must discover Flannery O'Connor, you know, I mean, and then. So that there was a, you know, that was definitely important. That was probably around the I feel like the same day I got a bunch of Flannery O'Connor books at the book trader that I found Street Hassle in the record, you know, in the record section, you know what I mean? Like, and I would read those or like, you know, but even over time, I would kind of in my 30s or something, I would go back to all those old books or the complete Flannery short stories and just make sure I read one short story, like go from the beginning to the end and always read in between, you know, while I'm reading something else, always go just read her short stories and keep going. And somewhere along the way in my mid 30s, I had a good run and I read, you know, three by Flannery O'Connor, which I had read before, but maybe fragmentarily. And I read it all that, which is Wise Blood, A Good Man Is Hard to Find, into The Violet Bear Way, which I never got to when I was younger and I bought that. And that one's just devastating.
That's one that I haven't read, actually. I've read a lot of her, but I haven't read that one. What's it about?
Well, it's about, if I remember correctly, it's about a special needs kid who's kind of ignored by his dad, or not, sometimes complete opposite, like always, he's always taking care of him. But, and then it's very, you know, Southern Gothic style where you got a couple of two trouble kids and I think the mom is missing. What I like about that read in particular is that I read them all in a row. It's sort of like that obsessive part of me where it's like you're hanging with your friend. I highly recommend you read it. Let's put it that way. What of Flannery O'Connor have you?
Well, I've read all the short stories. I love the short stories. Short stories are, I had a really long short story phase where it was almost all I read. And I got really into certain short story writers, including her. I've read Wise Blood. Is Everything That Rises Must Converge a novel? No, that's a short story collection, right?
That's the second short story collection.
Right. So I think all I've read are the short stories and Wise Blood.
Oh man, I highly recommend you read The Violet Bear It Away because it's like that classic kind of like when I finally had Straight Life in my hand, the bio we were talking about Art Pepper. It's like that. It's like, oh, I have this crazy and epic and American novel in my hands, and it's not that long. You know, that'll destroy. I had a good run back then, like, cause I think I had read, you know, Cormac McCarthy's, you know, Blood Meridian, which was no easy feat for me at the time, you know, that's a crazy book. And then I think because I got through that, then my brain was open and I reread certain things and I read that Flannery O'Connor that three four by Flannery O'Connor collection into Cormac McCarthy's No Country for Old Men, you know, which like that's like a pulp, it's written like a pulp fiction. That one you just can read it front to back, and it doesn't make you like the. I haven't read any of him lately, but that was definitely another one I was obsessed with for a while there.
Yeah, I love Blood Meridian. It is a challenging read. It's challenging not just in its language, and its language. Its structure is pretty straightforward. The language is very biblical, but it's also challenging in terms of some of the imagery. It's really harsh things happening in that book.
Yes, definitely. And it was like early on, you know, I definitely was. Yeah, they're just talking about dead babies or whatever.
There's a tree full of dead babies. Yeah.
Like, I mean, everybody talks about that now, you know, like, but at the time it was pretty devastating, but yeah, I trucked through, man. It's worth it. It's formative, you know, formative.
Well, we were talking about teenage reads,
definitely music related I remember I saw the Lou Reed documentary, the WHYY documentary, and they talk about him studying with Delmore Schwartz, and then you know, and they're like, unfortunately, he suffered from a lifetime of amphetamine abuse, all of which is documented in Saul Bellow's novel Humboldt's Gift. And I would like get those books, you know, again, pretend I'm reading them and try, and I'd be sitting around listening to, I don't know, the Velvet Underground and Lou Reed and Sonic Youth and you know, but I rarely, as a high school, rarely did I finish anything, I think. You know what I mean? I think in my 20s and then definitely mainly into my 30s, I had this transition where I just would sit down and read every day. You know, and once, I think it's partly, you know, that's the way my brain works. If I just read every day, now I'm a professional, you know, and that's a light term, because mainly I'm a musician, I guess, but I do read every day. But I think partly because I'm ADD, wasn't that often that it wasn't every day that I finished something, you know.
Have you found reading becoming easier as you've gotten older?
Well, what I really like now is that I can read multiple books at once, you know, and then once you're, once you know your book, you know, you're in. And then also another recent development is, if I really like something, even this latest Lou Reed bio, like I don't even have to read that much. A little bit goes a long way, you know, whereas before I'm like, I got to plow through. But so that's where I'm at right now.
Got it. Do you are you the kind of person who needs to finish a book that you start, or do you abandon books?
Well, there's plenty I don't finish. That's why, like, yeah, this past, what it was like a little bit before, it was like right before summer ended, and I was in the woods for a long stretch where, you know, camping with my family, or long enough. It was only a few days, but it felt like forever, and a bunch of my favorite books that I was just on a phase of not finishing anything, and finished them all. Oh yeah. I would say one book that helped me, like, the first book I finished in a while, that sort of got me going to finish my other books once I was in the woods, was, the Scar Tissue book by did you read that?
Anthony Kiedis. Yeah, I read that.
Anthony Kiedis. Oh my gosh. That was hard to put down.
That's something else, man. Oh my God. The way he talks about the women in his life is so fucking over the top and often.
Yes.
Yeah. Just not great sometimes.
Yes. Yes. And it was also trippy because I was played in Australia with, Courtney Barnett. She opened for Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. But, on the way back from Australia, I met my family in Hawaii. It sounds glamorous. We don't do this kind of thing all the time, but it was after a lot of touring, and we met there, and then like we got some shave ice, which is like Hawaiian.
It's like water ice. Yeah.
And then somebody was like, Anthony, your acai smoothie is ready. And then we look over, it's like nobody looks like Anthony Kiedis, and he had a mustache there, and then he sat next to us, and he was like very charming, and she's, anybody who's like, and mom has the nicest hair on the island, talking about my wife Suzanne, and he was very charming to my daughters as well, and I couldn't believe that. And then I remember right after that I was in Hawaii, and that's when I read Name of the World, and I was like, I feel like there was some kind of vortex there, and I just swore I was going to write a book or something. And something about meeting Anthony Kiedis, the new Anthony Kiedis with that mustache.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Nobody looks like him.
No.
And he had just turned 60, and he looked pretty amazing, gotta say. And then for that Christmas, my wife got me the Scar Tissue book. And yeah, once I started reading that thing, I could not put it down. It says that's an epic read. Let's put it that way. And then a little after that, I played a festival in Spain with my band, and we saw the Chili Peppers from the stage, and I was right next to Flea's amp, and I just never saw somebody shred a bass so hard that I was right on the stage, and you could see the crowd. It was just, it looked like a million people were out there. You know, I was like, wow, this is a whole other planet. And something about that combination, I finished that scar tissue book, and then yeah, I was on a good run after that.
Oh, I just like the idea of having a day where you meet Anthony Kiedis by chance at a shave ice place in Hawaii, and then read Dennis Johnson's The Name of the World after.
Right, and it literally happened that way, like, because that was, you know, I had a stack of those Dennis Johnson books that I had read, and The Name of the World was kind of skinny, and it's like the least inviting cover. It's just white and whatever. And I was like, well, this is what's left. And it's almost sort of like a midlife crisis-y guy. It's like a guy, you know, somebody who, a professor at a college, you know, which isn't my favorite kind of, I never went to college. So like, I can't fully empathize or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
But then it was just certain sentences, like I wrote down the quotes, you know, because, you know, they'll probably end up being my, you know, in my songs, you know, or whatever, you know, versions.
Sure.
But, yeah. You know, but like, I just love when you, I was reconnected with him in that moment.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I get it.
He's an old friend, you know.
There's a Sonic Youth song that lyrics were lifted from a Dennis Johnson book.
Really?
No. Yeah, it's on Daydream Nation. It's called The Sprawl, the one that Kim sings.
Oh, wow, that is awesome. I did not know that.
It's from the Dennis Johnson book called Stars at Noon, which is a really good one.
Oh, I'll read that next. Isn't that like the second novel, maybe?
I think it's very early, maybe second, yeah. It's his only female protagonist, which is interesting, too. But, you know, I got Daydream Nation in like middle school. I was obsessed with it, and it all got, you want to talk about like osmosis, like it got into my brain, like the words were just there. And then I finally read Stars at Noon, like maybe when I was 30, and I was just reading a sentence. I was like, wait a second, this is, and it just all came together that it was that song. Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. Yeah. Cause that, I'm glad you said that. Cause that reminds me, Sonic Youth, the most influential band of our time, you know, they had a hand in everything, and they're influenced by the Lou Reeds and such. And I feel like they kind of were my literature in a lot of ways, like, cause you, through osmosis, like you say, and those words and combined with sound, and maybe that's why I like to read with, you know, like I say, usually it's with no words, but that's why I love those like Sonic Youth experimental albums that were coming out just after I graduated, like the SYR records.
Yeah, they all had like the same cover but different colors, right? It was like a series. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally, the last one is Goodbye 20th Century. It's a double album, you know, when it becomes 2000 or one of, you know, that was maybe the last epic version of it. There's other side ones that aren't. But 1, 2, 3, 4 through 5. I don't know which number Goodbye 20th Century is, but I love all that, you know, and I remember kind of wanting to be more of a reader and listening to all that, you know, and it's same with like, I don't know, playing. I remember, like, for instance, I have a dub cassette on the one side. It's the green Sonic Youth Records SYR release vinyl that I had, and on the other side is White Light, White Heat, you know, essentially Sister Ray, and you're playing those songs as a teen, you know, with a stack of books that maybe you'll finish.
There were certain bands and musicians when I was a kid that made me want to read more. Super obvious, but Bob Dylan, you know, there was something about him being super literary. So like, I remember You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome When You Go mentions like Rambo and Verlaine. And I was like, well, I guess I got to read Rambo and Verlaine now, you know, or like, remember John Lennon, like, there was this rumor that like, there was a line from I Am the Walrus that was stolen from James Joyce. So I was like, okay, now I got to read James Joyce. You know what I mean? Did you have anything like that, that kind of like music inspired you to read?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely like like I say, like the Delmore Schwartz thing, and they're with Lou Reed. But there's definitely more, and certainly, I've done the same where I've tried to, like, I've gotten James Joyce books because I know I'm supposed to read them, and like I got the one, what's the one, Rambo Illuminations, and I love that. I love, you know, saying a prayer through the spider's web. I love that they all worship him, like Dylan and Patti Smith, and they drop his name so much, and I respect them, and I buy their books, but I haven't gotten through. Same with James Joyce. I like you. You love James Joyce, like, today as well?
I do. I think the book to start with is Dubliners, his book of short stories.
Right, which I got back then, and I got again recently, so that's what I'll do.
That's yeah, that's great stuff. But I was going to ask you, what is reading on tour like for you? Do you take books on the road, or do you visit bookstores when you're on the road?
Oh, I definitely visit bookstores and stock up. Reading on tour, I'll bring a book or multiple books, and I'll read in between things. But lately, at least, I'd say it's less, but just here and there. But it's just like things are just moving pretty quick there, so I get kind of lost in the music world. But definitely when I'm home, and then when I go on vacations and stuff, I'll really catch up on reading, but just a little bit in the morning every day. And then at night, I like to do it then too. You know, morning and night, I'm always reading something.
Do you associate any particular books with any particular tours? Like, do you remember, like, being in the van reading a certain book?
It's fun. I mean, yeah, I remember I used to bring a briefcase filled with all kinds of books, and definitely some of my favorite ones on the road are ones that I mentioned earlier. Like, I had a little briefcase that had Blood Meridian in it and Burroughs' Interzone, which is just a random collection of story. Like, so I don't even know if it's like you know what I mean? I think it's just a random one that I found, but it kind of helped me understand him better. But I had a resurgence into Burroughs, like, right before, a little before the pandemic hit, and I had never read Queer, and I really liked that one while I was on the road.
What's the best bookstore you've ever been to? What's your favorite bookstore anywhere?
For touring especially, I mean, Powell's bookstore in Portland, you know, is pretty epic.
What's the best bookstore in Philly right now?
Oh, well, the Brickbat is an amazing bookstore. Have you ever been?
Yeah, great store.
And I like it because they're sort of what we keep talking about. They plenty of literature, and I also sort of like a certain era of you know, I get attached to a certain era of books, like these Philip K. Dick books. When this series, they just pop, and like they'll have lots of those used, you know, and records and Sun Ra. Like, that's where I got my Sun Ra Space Is the Place. And that it's all combined, you know, all my world is combined there.
Is there a writer that you used to love that you fell out of love with?
Okay. Well, there's not I don't love this writer anymore, but I'm glad I read him because he's brilliant. But I would not, and I read them all, and it started actually because I heard he was a fan, and I even went on his podcast. But it's Bret Easton Ellis, uh-huh. And he's obviously a great writer, and a certain, not, you know, but it's so crazy violent that I'm more sensitive now, and I couldn't go down that rabbit hole again.
Slaves of New York.
But have you read him?
Bret Easton Ellis?
Yeah.
I've read everything. I don't like the new one, but I like everything else.
Oh, I don't. Maybe I didn't read. Maybe there isn't a new one. that I mean, maybe I didn't read the new one. What's that one?
It's called The Shards. And it's like it's like a high school murder, serial killer mystery kind of thing. I just feel like it could have been like 200 pages shorter and been much more effective. But
sure.
Why do you think it's being a dad has made you more sensitive to violence in writing?
Well, I was actually a relatively new dad for the second time, actually, when I started reading him. Or maybe a dad for the first time. But I didn't think I'd get, it's just like anything else, I guess, you get desensitized. I didn't think I'd be turning every page. Well, you know, what I love about him is that he makes it so you turn the page every time. Like he's skilled with the direct writing, so direct, like in this way, it makes you turn the page. And like, so, Rules of Attraction and Less Than Zero, those even have less violence in ways. And I would probably read those again. I might read others again, but like, for instance, I read, American Psycho, and then I was trying to get Glamorama, and when I read it at first, I loved it, but then all of a sudden it gets to the extreme.
Yeah.
It's so like the violence is extreme.
It's very extreme.
Yeah, no, I love them all, you know. If I had to pick out of memory, I would say that the first two are my favorites, and I would read them easily again. But it's more once American Psycho came out, he was on that extreme, maybe for the most part. You know, he just went for it. But yeah, I'm more sensitive lately. So Dylan, you're a big Dylan fan?
Yeah, definitely.
What I love about Dylan is, I remember when I was making my album Bottle It In, the bootleg series at the time was all the Christian stuff. But it was live. It was live, and like I couldn't stop listening to it. Like, it opens up, they do a Slow Train Coming before I think the album's out, and he's like, "This song's called Slow Train. It's been coming a long time, and it's picking up speed." You know, like, yeah. And then he start playing it.
Amazing, like, yeah.
And I just saw him live. I've seen him live the last three tours, and every time it's my favorite. And it happened again. He's killing it right now live, and I love his new style of writing, like all those words. And then you see him live, and it's, they keep changing the arrangements. They play a similar set list, but not entirely. But the last few tours, and every time I'm just like, man, this guy's still killing it.
How did you like Chronicles? Did you read Chronicles, his autobio?
I loved it when it came out, and then I read it more recently. It's so well written, and if you read it in his tone of voice, it makes you laugh, because it's sort of like somewhere between like a spy novel, if you didn't get to any, or you know, detective novel, if you didn't get to any crimes combined. It's very poetic. Like if you think of him as a narrator to a detective book crossed with a movie, except. Every line, you got to reread it if you haven't read it recently, even just for the first chapter or so. And I think you'll have a good chuckle, and like in a totally loving way of like, you just imagine him, it coming out of his mouth, and the sentences are just so well written, but also kind of funny. And yeah, if you think of that as a Dylan detective novel or something, it's pretty beautiful.
Is there a book that's ever made you cry?
Yeah, definitely. If I had to pick my favorite fiction novel right now, it's definitely Dennis Johnson's first novel, Angel. And that book affected me hardcore. Granted, there was crazy things going on in my life, so I was thinking about that. But I couldn't even tell you. I'd have to give away the end of the novel to say why, but I definitely cried from that novel. And you know, I guess about life in general, but and I say this joke, but it's true. Like, I don't cry in front of people, but I cry watching TV or something. You know, that's where you get your release. You know, even if it's like, because it'll trigger. not even necessarily what's on screen. I mean, a little bit what's on screen, but it triggers all these real things in life or my own life or whatever. So yeah, so it was pretty profound for a book to do that. And it did that.
Yeah. What about a book that made you laugh?
That one made me laugh too. Angels made me laugh. I laughed a lot in just about Sun Ra in Space is the Place, just his extreme. Pretty much that's what I asked for in all my gods that I worship, is that you got to be funny. You can make somebody cry and be funny at the same time. John Prine style, or, you know, Terry Allen style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you're a fan of his music, Terry Allen.
Oh yeah, I am, definitely. John Prine too.
The storytellers, they'll suck you in, you know, with the song in general. They'll hook you in with the pretty chords or whatever hypnotic chords they use, but then they tell this story, and it's beautiful, and it's about life, and but it's often very funny, and it can get violent. You know, Terry will get quite violent, and there's a book a bio coming out about Terry Allen, actually, that I'm really excited about. That's a first. I've played some music with Terry. He's a hero, huge hero. And same with John Prine. I played a little with Prine.
No way. Wow. What was that like?
It was all, I mean, first I had just played a bunch of shows with him, and he knew I covered some of his songs. One of his songs that I recorded with a friend of his. So, and I knew who worked for his label. So the combination, we had played together, and I got to sit in on stage enough times that finally we got him into the studio just before New Year's 2020. And he sang his song, How Lucky, with me. So there's an EP I have called Speed Sound Lonely KV EP. And Speed of the Sound of Loneliness is a John Prine song. So it starts with that, and it more or less ends with his version of How Lucky. And he's on it with me. He plays guitar and sings. And yeah. And then we performed it together at the Grand Ole Opry on New Year's 2020.
Amazing.
And then, yeah. So, and then, you know, which then the pandemic hit, it was insane. I turned 40 in January 3rd, 2020. I recorded with Prine, and then, you know, a few months later, shit hit the fan.
You're all of a sudden you're on lockdown in Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of something in the latest Lou Reed book I read that I never heard about. And I read, you know, as a kid too, like I read like the one Velvet Underground bio I could find. I read the Sonic Youth book, you know, like Confusion is next, and Velvet Underground, Uptight. But like when Lou Reed, when they re-recorded the song Heroin, Lou Reed changed the lyrics from saying, I know just where I'm going, which is the opening line, to I don't know just where I'm going. And that's when John Cale disagreed, like as in he's saying he's surrendering as opposed to being confident where he's going. And that's when they started to disagree. But, you know, and I just love, you know, and I feel just like Jesus' son. You know, I just love how we're kind of cosmically crossing all those influences with Dennis Johnson and such. So that was an interesting fact I read right before you showed up.
Oh, that's really cool. How do I put this? Do you have any kind of a spiritual practice or belief? And if so, are there books that have sort of affected you in terms of life approach, spirituality, philosophy?
Yeah, I think that they just, you find those books along the way. Definitely, like I say with me, because I play music and I love how they're all, music and books are often so connected, but there are some people who are both. And I remember I lived in Boston for a couple of years while my wife was going to grad school, and I got turned on to John Fahey, and I was home alone a lot, finger picking, and my dad gave me his copy of the American Folk Anthology, and I saw people that were going to college up there, I wasn't, that were listening to that kind of music, and I got into Delta blues and things. And then right when I left, one of my closest friends there, he gave me John Fahey's How Bluegrass Music Destroyed My Life.
Yeah.
Have you read that book?
I have. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, that would be one, because he was my hero, you know, still is. I have his book here, propping up the phone, Vampire Vultures, which was the second collection. I just love, and he's got his own unique style, you know, his own stubbornly unique style. Like, Sonic Youth, The Eternal, that's a John Fahey. Everybody worships John Fahey, you know, and he didn't even have that much success, like money success. You know, and everybody talks about him all the time, but that would be an example of a book, you know, and pretty much all these other main books I'm telling you about, they all shape me, and I am religious in that way. And I'll see something, the color of a book or something, or like when I saw The Angels first pressing and I had just finished it and I looked, yeah, I take things as being cosmic or something, and I like to have hold the books, and I keep them all around me, and they speak to me, you know, definitely. Often if there's multiple copies of something, a very one copy will speak to me, or usually the one I pick up first, you know, and they're like, no, that was meant for me, you know.
Yeah. You know, I get the sense that you're really into, and tell me if I'm wrong, but like overlap, synchronicity, coincidence, things like that.
I for sure. And I am. It's funny, it's like my bandmate Jesse always talks about this moment in Repo Man, where he's like, let's, you know, we're all part of some collective subconscious. He's like, say you're thinking about a plate of shrimp, and someone says, plate, shrimp, plate of shrimp. You know? But no. That's a funny version of it's true, you know? Things pop up. Things are talking to us, maybe.
If you're listening, they are, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had to give a book as a gift to a friend today, what would you give them?
Okay. Well, my same bandmate Jesse, I gave him Tree of Smoke by Dennis Johnson for his previous birthday. And even though I was looking for, I would say definitely the gateway into Dennis Johnson is Jesus Son. Do you agree?
100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
And again, I love that that's a book you can read it once and you can read it literally right again, which is not sometimes your brain, while you're in it, I often say, oh, I'm going to read this again. That happened with Art Pepper, Straight Life as well. But that is still a Bible. I still will go back to that. But again, yeah. But Jesus Son is definitely one. But I would say it took me a couple years or more to get past the first story. But that's just my brain. You know what I mean? And if you get to the middle, and then also by the end, it's all just so rewarding, because he gets so dreamy, you know? He gets like, he's real, like a movie, like a violent movie. You know what I like about him is that even when I was reading Angel, is that like I saw certain movies afterward, and I could have sworn it was that book. You know, it seems like a movie, like a serious movie.
What's the book that you've reread the most?
The book that I reread the most. That's a good question. I feel like any book I've read, I will say, if I had to pick somebody that stayed with me the longest, it was Flannery O'Connor. You know, I go back to her because she influenced so many, you know, writers, sure. But then, musicians, let's say, definitely people like Nick Cave, they owe a lot to her. And so I go back to her in between all the time. And like, but like, it was like I said, I'd read her short stories front to back in between living my life. And I've definitely read her novels more than once, but I feel like there's not many people I've read more than twice, but I feel like there's going to be a third time coming around for certain.
Is there a copy of a book, and I don't mean the book itself, but the particular copy of it, that has special sentimental value for you?
Yes, plenty. And all of them, really. Like, that, like, I can, most things in my life can get beat up, but I like to keep my books pretty, you know, crisp. They, but then after over time, they do get beat up. But like, you know, when I finally wrap my head around, you know, as much as I could, like that Naked Lunch book from my, that was given to me in my early 20s, that I finally read in my late 30s on the road, it was coming apart, you know, and I was all taped together, and there's the back of it, there's so many lines, you know, of his quotes, you know, in the back of it. And he also, he had a style of, you know, borrowing from others I've adapted certain styles of borrowing from others, let's say, him included. And there are some others where, cause you know, in writing, is so much of it is homage, or in music or in writing. And once you sort of realize that, there's a way to copy somebody, which people see that, and that's, you can see when somebody's copying. And then there's another thing, a way you can steal something. I'm not saying I stole anything blatantly from him or others, but it's funny. You can steal, once you know, you can steal something and you would never know, because you're like recycling it and you're inspired, you know, like Dylan or something, you know, it's like it, the world is better for it. Ideally, that's what you're aiming for, but you're first super inspired. So, you know, on a religious level, and then you flip that how you can. Let's put it that way.
And so we come to the end. Thanks, Kurt, for your time and generosity. I look forward to more book talk with you in the future. This episode was recorded by me from my home in Mount Washington, Los Angeles, while Kurt was in his home in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It was post-produced and edited by Justin Geller, also in Philadelphia, and facilitated by Lars Kreslins in, you guessed it, Philadelphia. Apologies Music is Bach, arranged and performed by Cyrus Garamani in L.A. Remember, it was the generous contribution of Sci-Fi Fantasy that funded today's talk, so please seek them out in gratitude. And there's more apology stuff at apology.zone on the internet and apology_zine on Instagram. There's also a Substack called Apology Reviews and a Patreon that I think just goes under the name Apology. Anyway, please visit me at any and all of the above. See you next time, and thanks for listening.